This is Signal 337, the podcast for the innately curious and creative. Hey friends, this is Tim McKenna, and you're listening to another episode of Signal 337. So, I want you to do a little experiment with me here. I want you to close your eyes and picture in your mind's eye my home office. Fairly large room, couple big windows here that overlooks the street, and there's a small lake out front. Very picturesque, very Hallmark movie looking. But inside the room, I have my desk set up over in one corner, which probably takes up about 5% of the entire space. And I want you to picture the rest of that space being completely strewn about with toys everywhere. This is not because when I'm taking a break from my work, I'm going to play Legos, although that does sound incredibly attractive. No, I have toys for children that are under the age of 4, just strewn all over the place. I've got a 3-year-old son at this point and a 11-month-old daughter. And they come into the room here whenever we are at home in the evening or on the weekends, or if one of them is sick during the day and they can't go to daycare, they'll spend some time in here, and there's a number of toys for them to go and play. Initially, this office was set up as more of an actual professional office and kind of a spare bedroom at that, but it has slowly been overtaken with toys, and to almost any parent's chagrin, knows the pain of stepping on a Lego with their bare feet. So it's interesting that how my office has become a toy room, but maybe inadvertently has become an observation opportunity. Because while there is toys strewn about, and generally my children are pretty good at playing with the toys and not pulling the cords that connect my computer and all of my monitors, what's really interesting is that when they're in here and playing, it feels like I'm watching like a nature documentary of just seeing how these individuals interact with their environment and interact with the toys that they have, how they cue off of each other, and then what drives them to do their next behavior. I want you to think of that, and this is going to be the parental episode. It talks about the UX of being a parent and just observations that you make about kids. Trust me, for those of you who don't have kids, don't want kids, could care less about kids, you'll find some enjoyment with this as well. But this is a little bit about like the UX of being a parent. And in particular, just some of the interesting observations and behaviors I see my children exhibit when they're playing. Like I said, my desk setup is very much like 5% of this room. I have very much scaled back my enormous TV monitor and have gone down to like just 2 regular monitors. So I got a pretty small footprint in this room. And my kids have got a mixture of different toys, from the fabric tactile like little booklets that is safe for a teething child to munch on, to I think there's a couple of like plastic tools like hammers and screwdrivers and tool belt, to the much aligned Blippi spaceship that I wholly believe that Blippi is a prince of hell and why is this thing in my room, but there's a number of different toys in here, and I would be remiss, my dog has got her chew toy in here as well. So there's a number of different toys in here, and it's interesting to think about when you're young and you have a toy or something, like how you utilize it. Some toys are purposely made and have an analog to an adult tool. That would be absolutely my son's John Deere tool belt with his play hammer, his play screwdriver, his play saw, and his play tape measure. But it's interesting seeing how he interacts with these tools, because he's seen me use the real thing. He's seen me use all of those real analog tools, And then watching his behavior using his toy analogs and just seeing how he approaches things. There'll be a lot of statements of, oh, that's cute, that's going to happen in here. But I'll watch my son take his toy hammer and he'll go up to the wall on an area of the wall that's, you know, doesn't need to be fixed for anything, but the way he'll approach it, the way that he'll look at the wall, the way he'll kind of look at things and then just start tapping on things. It's cute, honestly, but it's also really telling of just how much certain behaviors are picked up from direct observation. And it's also incredibly interesting to see how my son would approach similar problems based off of his context and his understanding of using the tools that he's seen me use, and also how he would approach something that he has no context for. So, case in point, there's this orange and blue blippy rocket ship toy thing that has three levels. It's a little playhouse type of a deal thing shaped as a rocket. And there's a couple little vehicles in there. There's a couple blippy figurines and whatnot. And it's basically a playhouse of toys. So I've seen him go over and utilize it. And then I'll see him play with the toys and talk aloud. He is coming up with scenarios. He's basically reenacting what he has seen on an episode of Blippi. Or he is interpreting other interactions of other scenes from other shows, such as Paw Patrol or PJ Masks, which is his new favorite thing, unfortunately. So it's interesting to see a three-year-old taking these toys and then seeing how they're playing with the toys. Are they playing with the toys as intended, as you would imagine someone taking a small little toy car and then driving it down the big ramp, or how is he approaching it otherwise? So there's a whole matter of play that comes into the child's mind, and it is incredibly interesting to watch, because while there is some context that they're basing their play on, whether it be from a direct inspiration or a direct observation from watching either a show or watching myself or something, there's also a great deal of what if, and what if we did it this way? Case in point, my son will take the little blippy car from the space station and drive it down the ramp as the toy is intended for you to drive this little toy down the ramp. But then my son will take said car and drive it sideways along my walls, much to my chagrin. And he's never seen that done. He's never seen it done in a show, as much as I know. But it's interesting to see, oh, what else can I do with this? So there's a level of exploration, an unafraid exploration of playing with these toys. And it's interesting because he'll jump from one toy to another pretty quickly. But what I also find interesting is that he won't mix certain toys together. As an example, the John Deere hammer that he has, he will not take his hammer to the space station, the little spaceship, because they're like almost two different worlds for him. He has to be in a certain mode, a certain way of thinking, a certain want to play of those things. And he won't approach that, and he won't mix those toys. Now, my 11-month daughter at this point, she'll eat, she'll play with anything as long as it fits in her mouth because she's teething. So there's even more of an unafraid approach from there. And it's interesting how she does more exploration with really no context for things. She's never seen me use a hammer. So she'll pick up said John Deere hammer and just look at it and really observe it. She'll try to eat it, of course, and that's cute, but it's really interesting seeing her observe and interact with her environment, and it makes you wonder, like, what sort of process is going through? What sort of, like, thinking is happening there? Many of her toys are pretty innocuous and pretty safe to utilize, so there's nothing that's going to hurt her or cause some sort of unexpected interaction. But it's interesting to see how she approaches things also, and her being 2 years younger than my son, It's interesting how they both approach things, and there's already context being set in with my son with certain toys and how he interacts with them. Now, some toys he'll interact with that he'll absolutely mix and play, like rubber ducks and Blippi, or other cars he'll take from Hot Wheels and he'll mix it with the Batman Mobile and all these different things. So there's certain toys that are okay to mix, and then there's certain toys that aren't. And there's certain toys that bring up different lines of questioning from him as well. Hey, how do I use this? Would you use this hammer on this thing? Should I hammer the wall? Yes, no, and God, no, don't hammer the wall. So it's interesting from a purely like observational perspective to see an unabashed, completely open exploration through play that I think many parents either unconsciously or consciously observe every single day with, you know, really young children. What does this have to do with user experience? It's interesting to think about how toy manufacturers actually go about creating toys and how those toys, whether they were meant to be educational or informative in a certain way, just happen to be educational and informative, and how that shapes how someone thinks about things. So, for myself, I love Legos. Still love Legos. I had more goddamn Legos than I ever thought possible. Like, I had one of those, like, truck bed lockers full of Legos. And I had Legos of all different types. I had City, Space, Ice Planet, Space Police, all sci-fi stuff. I had the underwater stuff. Hell, my sister's, like, Pretty Princess, like, Mega Block stuff. I used that as well. And it's interesting because I would be able to play with all those things, and there was a system. That was like a whole system. Maybe my first interaction with a design system, really, was through playing with Legos. But it was interesting because Legos allowed me to play and explore different ideas and concepts. And I was very much of an introverted kid where I would create worlds within my head and create scenarios. And basically what I was doing is creating my own version of the things that I saw in the cartoons that I loved. G.I. Joe, He-Man, and God knows what else I watched when I was younger. Definitely a lot of Batman, too. But it was interesting is that Legos allowed me to recreate those scenarios. But I would never mix Legos with, like, other toys. The Legos were their own thing. And it's interesting seeing how kids will interact with various toys and see how they are utilized. And when you really think about user experience, like how a product is utilized, how it's meant to be utilized, and then how people actually use it, it's interesting to see that hasn't really changed that much from early days of play as well. What I think is interesting from the standpoint of like toy manufacturers and think about how children play and how they approach situations, it's really fascinating to learn how they put two and two together, how they create certain connections, how they would approach the play, and how they might play with a certain toy if they have no context of what it's meant to be used for, how it's supposed to be utilized, what makes it fun to play with. If there was no instruction, if there was no way for you to really understand what it's supposed to be doing, how would you play with it? Case in point, I do not have any toy guns in our house. My son has only ever, I think, ever seen a gun maybe on like TV, movies and stuff when he's watched stuff with me. And we don't have any guns in our home, and my son's never actually seen a real one, and we don't have any toy guns, like, ever. But my son knows what a gun is. He knows, from my perspective, saying guns are bad, guns are dangerous, we wouldn't want to play the gun. But if I gave him a toy gun, and I said it was okay to play with, I wonder how he would even begin to approach it. And let's take a less violent example here. If I was to give my son a VR headset, now he's 3 years old. He's definitely figured out how to use all of our tablets and everything. I don't think it'd be that much of a stretch for him to figure out a VR headset. How would he know what to play with? How would he know how to play with it? How would he go about doing it? Would he put it on his head and would he try to play the game that would start up through it? Or would he use it as a helmet? That's what's interesting, is to see how the act of play allows you to actually try different things out. Whereas when we get older, we become a little bit more rigid and a little bit more afraid of doing things wrong. And I think that's the really interesting nugget and interesting insight with this, is that through play, nothing is wrong. It's just different. And I feel that type of approach to trying different things is such an incredibly important part of the act of play that it allows you to think differently. It allows you to approach scenarios much differently, and it creates inspiration for yourself. I don't know if you've heard of this really famous example test here. It's called the Marshmallow Challenge, where you're given X amount, I forget how many, the quantity of these things, but you're given, like, I think it's like 30 spaghetti noodles, dried spaghetti noodles. You're given X amount of, like, tape and string and one marshmallow. And what you have to do is try to build the tallest, stablest structure that you possibly can to have your marshmallow sit the highest up. And this test is meant, this activity is meant to see just how creatively you think. And it's been a fun, time-honored team-building exercise that I've seen in a number of organizations. And what's really interesting is that the outcomes of this activity is incredibly interesting depending on the group that's doing it. They have found that PhDs, postdocs, and doctorates and stuff, really smart people, really brain-heavy folks, perform the worst on this. And the people who've always done the best group that always, like, approaches this is young kids, because there is this element of play, this element of trying things, and this missing fear motivation that doesn't get in their way of trying different things out. And through this activity, through the study of this, is that we create hierarchies. We create different groups and how we approach problem solving. And we definitely have a fear motivation that's built in about a right way and a wrong way. And we like to debate, and we like to approach things methodically. How are we going to do this in a way that's going to be at the most success? Whereas kids just go ahead and try shit out. And they're like, oh, that didn't work. Let's try it again. Like, there's an amount of, like, excitement and just, let's try it again. Let's go from there. And in many ways, it is how Thomas Edison's always quoted, or he didn't find one way to make a light bulb. He found 99 different ways to make a light bulb. Not to make a light bulb, I should say. Kids approach us with this same unabashed, like, curiosity and just trying different things out. And time again, as this activity has proven out, that young kids, really young kids, are the ones that are the most successful, usually create the tallest structures, and usually do it the fastest, because there isn't this built-in pressure of being right and wrong and creating these social hierarchies that we tend to do in groups. Maybe they just haven't had to have to do a lot of group projects yet, as many of us had to do in high school. But over time, it's interesting how the act of play changes a great deal as hierarchical and cultural and societal pressures and influences change how we approach problem solving, change how we approach presenting ourselves, and change how we go about thinking about ourselves. We become more internalized and we become more thoughtful. And that is a good thing in a lot of regards, but it also introduces a level of paralysis in how we approach things. And the fear of being wrong and the fear of doing something incorrect or failure is a mighty motivator in a lot of people's lives. Whereas children don't really have that innately. They just go and play and they learn things. And it is through us, as parents, as a society, it's through us that they learn the right ways and the wrong ways of doing things, and that does spill out into their play. You can play with a fork by an electrical outlet, and you won't last long, and that's where we step in as parents. No, don't do that. But it's interesting then how they would take that, and then as they see us telling them not to do that, or other things, like how they would take that and do other things. And this is why I find children's television a little concerning in this regard. Something that my son says a lot of times, oh, I don't know how to do that. I can't do that. Who told you that? I think what's happening is he's internalizing some of the drama that is happening on his shows, like Paw Patrol and PJ Masks. And he doesn't understand that it's part of a narrative and that's meant to be overcome and everything. But it's interesting, even at his young age, he's even internalizing what he's hearing and seeing on these shows, and that's his first response. Or I'm already starting to observe and see this ingrained, like, fear starting to set in. And as any good parent should try to do, is to really try to encourage him to continue to grow and play and have fun, and just don't worry about Romeo and Luna Girl and Night Ninja. Jesus Christ, why can I cite these characters? We watch too much Paw Patrol and PJ Masks and everything else. What am I talking about in this episode? You know, I talked about like this as being the UX of being a parent. Really, it's more like the UX research of being a parent. Watching children grow and watching them interact with their environments, watching them interact with objects, and seeing how they would do their own problem solving, seeing how they approach things, is incredibly interesting because it does begin to show the earliest foundations, the earliest pillars of how individuals will go and grow up and start to cement more of their own identity and how they approach different problems in the future. So it's interesting to see at this young of age how these formative experiences are already shaping how they think about things, and they're looking for more context, more guidance, more validation from us as parents to see how what they're doing, is that something that, oh, this is cool, this is fun, is this okay? And then when they start to see that, they continue doing it, and maybe times they'll stay away from it, or they'll continue doing it until it really sinks in. I don't know. I think it's incredibly interesting from an observational standpoint, and yeah, it's cute watching my kids play with different things. I definitely have to tell my son to not use his plastic hammer on everything. But from an interesting kind of perspective as being a researcher, being a designer, and thinking about how these toys were developed, how these toy manufacturers thought kids would play with these things. Are they being played with in the way that, you know, they were intended, or they thought they were going to be intended? I'm super glad my son does not take that Blippi space rocket playhouse and use it as a rocket and throw it around the room. Thank God. But it's interesting to see how different modes of play and how they interact with their environment in different ways, and how it is starting to kind of shape who their personality is and the kind of person they will become. There will be more research. There'll definitely be more updates on this as my kids grow older. Who knows? Maybe when my kids become teenagers, they'll throw that Blippi space rocket ship at me because I didn't let them have the car. That remains to be seen. But when you're thinking about this in the context of our work as designers and researchers, and thinking about how people interact with whatever system, whatever product, whatever service or something, think about what shaped their approach. Think about the multitude of different influences and motivators and triggers that have helped shape a person's response, their mindset, how they approach things, how open they are to things, how closed off they are to things. And these are all heuristics and psychometrics that all play into how well a product or service is going to be successful, because understanding the context of how people are approaching things and not just throwing them all into the bucket of an easy-to-write persona, but really understanding what drives individuals, it can be traced all the way back to being little kids and playing with toys and seeing how they thought of things, how they were inspired to mix and match and play with different things, and You know, what also staved them away from certain things. There was a lot of cute moments, and I'm incredibly happy to get to be able to see these two little ankle biters grow up. And I would love to hear from any other designers or product managers or anyone else who works in the industry at all. What's been your experience with seeing your kids interact with their toys, their environments? I'd be curious if anyone actually works for a toy manufacturer and what kind of testing and kind of like market research is done. And if you are not interested at all about kids stuff at all, I'd be curious to hear your perspectives on how different interactions throughout a person's life really helps to shape and mold their psyche. So with all of that, I'd love to hear conversation. And you can join into that conversation on LinkedIn and on Twitter. On Twitter, we are at Signal337. And on LinkedIn, you can look us up, Signal337, where we have a business page where we post every episode every week. You can join the conversation with there. And yeah, this was the parent episode. This was the dad episode. It was interesting. And as I look around my room, I've got to clean up a whole bunch of toys. But everything that I talk about here is from my own observation, my own experiences, and my own poor feet stepping on Legos. It is not indicative of any past or present companies that I've worked with. But to wrap up, I just want to say thank you to everyone who listens to this show every week. I really appreciate it. It means a great deal to me, and I hope you have a great day.